Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. With headlines about primaries, caucuses, Brexit, and Mexit, along with Australian wildfires and Super Bowl halftime shows, it's easy to forget the importance of local news. Well, today we bring it all back home with two interviews that reach into the heart of what is important locally: budgets, property taxes, and grassroots activism. Today we talk about how your hard-earned money is being spent by the town of Coburn with the person in charge of deciding where those tax dollars go. Also, we are going to talk about drugs. That's right, cannabis. Who's growing it, who plans to grow it, and what one township in Northumberland is doing about it or not. So today it's about money and drugs. That's right, money and drugs. And you thought local news was boring. So let's get started. Municipal budgets are boring. That is until you get your tax bill. Then suddenly it hits home. No matter if you are a senior on a fixed income trying to stay in your home or a recent addition to the community who has just bought a house, seeing those property taxes is a sober lesson in how vital it is to pay attention to the local municipal budget. Well, now is your chance to get more informed. With me today in studio is the politician in charge of putting together Coburg's budget, Deputy Mayor Suzanne Séguin. Welcome, Suzanne.
Well, thank you, Robert. Nice to be here.
Thank you for joining me on Consider This. Before we get started, may I wish you a belated happy birthday?
Well, thank you so much.
I understand you celebrated that special day on Tuesday.
I did.
Fantastic. There are a lot of moving parts when putting together an annual budget for a municipality the size of Coburg. What is it that you focus on as a person in charge when you're trying to get your head around the budget?
I think you said it perfectly in your intro, Robert. The seniors that live in their homes that are trying to manage on a fixed budget, our responsibility as members of council is to look after the people that live here and work here. And that's always in the back of my mind, is how are those seniors going to pay their tax bills? How are those new residents going to pay their tax bills? So it's always there when we're going through the various components of the budget.
To what extent does that budget target that you set back at the very beginning of the process, I believe it was a 1.9% increase, what role does that play in as you begin to formulate where the budget's going to go, what you're going to spend money on, and what money you're not going to spend?
Well, again, in that early stages in September of the year when we started last year, we don't really know what the growth factor is going to be. So it usually varies from 1% to 2%. Now, 1% is about $250,000. So that's the growth component that we dealt with this year. So we look at all the different aspects of obviously the mandatory requirements that we have to do for infrastructure. And then we also look at the cost of living, what people can afford. We look at, in this particular year, I wanted to focus on restoring, repairing, revitalizing our current assets. It was difficult. This was a difficult budget, but those were the key components, trying to stay within the cost of living. And historically, at least for the last few years, the town of Coburg's budget has never exceeded 2%. So I set it just below that at 1.9.
What's the psychological difference between setting it at 2% and setting it at 1.9?
Well, I don't think there really is any. I mean, it's not like $9.99 at a grocery store. You know, you think you're getting a deal when it's really $10. but I think historically, if you set it that point, you know, when we first started our budget deliberations on the 9th and the 10th of January, we were looking at 2%. And I said, well, it's not quite what I wanted, but, you know, we're good. and it's still cost of living. And then we gradually upped that up to, you know, a few things came through. The $250,000 from Walmart was just the first day, first hour of deliberations. And I said, oh, my goodness, where do we go from here? And then there's a full 1%. So we had to look at minimizing and trying to get that back down. And then, of course, there was the non-union factor of $105,000, I think. That brought it up to 2.7. So we had a lot of really hard decisions to make as a council.
Could you just step back a second? Because maybe not everybody has been following this as closely as you have. You mentioned something about Walmart. And what was that, please, so that
every,
people understand?
Every year, the budget includes an amount of money to offset any tax wins, I guess. Some of the large big box stores sometimes fight the taxes that they pay for the town. So this year, for 2020, Mr. Davies had put in $225,000, just in case somebody fights and wants to get a rebate on their taxes. It's usually the big box stores. And we figured it's the fourth year of a phase-in, like we have a four-year phase-in for taxes. And it was the fourth year, so we figured $250 or $225 should handle it. And then Walmart started this process a few years ago and finally got the tax win, and so they got $250,000.
That's incredible.
The entire tax rebate we had to pay was $475, but because $250 of that was Walmart, so over and above what we'd already put into the budget, we had to add that back in.
That's incredible. I didn't know that, and I'm sure the listeners, many of them didn't know that this goes on all the time.
All the time.
Is that right?
All the time, because the tax bills are high, the footprints are big, and these big box corporations, they usually do a regional, they go to court and they say, you know, we're paying too much taxes. And yeah, all the people that shop at Walmart, you know, think they're getting a great big deal. Well, $475 in total had to come out of the tax rate this year.
That's jaw-dropping.
I know.
And you know, to think that, they're supposed to be contributing their fair share, and this is their strategy.
That's their strategy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just stunning. Just stunning.
It certainly was to us, because we started that day at 2%, and I was thinking, okay, we can do this.
Yeah.
And then we get this, and, you know, boy.
And you say all the box stores? Does this include the mall and the Home Depot?
Well, you know,
and
usually
Rona?
The bigger ones, like Home Depot, has come back, they basically look at their corporate strategy in Toronto, I guess, and they say, you know, we're paying too much taxes, so let's all band together and we'll do a class action thing, and everybody gets a piece of the pie.
And then you've got
and it's the small municipalities that end up having to pay that, because they have not budgeted. Like I say, we budgeted about 2.25, and we ended up getting $475 that we had to pay back.
And there must be all the legal expenses as well that go
absolutely
into fighting it as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, because it's not a 2-month thing.
No, yeah. Years and years, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving along then a little bit. To what extent, when you look over your process, to what extent do the things that people say to you, everyday people say to you, factor into your budget process? I'm thinking now about, you walk the streets. I'm sure people must talk to you about this. There's public meetings. There's bang the table. What sort of things are people saying to you about the budget before you got to the final decision?
I guess the big thing is people approach me all the time, and that's what I love about this job. I absolutely, it's people and it's their issues, but it's primarily I can't pay my bills. I get a lot of seniors. I get a lot of people. I had a call the other day from a senior who it was like 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, and he calls me at home. He says, "Are you the Suzanne from council?" And I said, "Absolutely. What can I do for you?" And he says, "Well, I'm looking to sell my house and I need a room somewhere and I want to find a place to live." And single moms. And I know I was a single mom for a long time, and I know how tough it is to pay the rent and to buy groceries and to put clothes and to pay for all those school trips that the kids are taking. So It's basically that, Robert. It's trying to live within your means. I've had to my entire life, and that's the primary motivator. And people call me all the time, and they say, "Have you got a minute?" And usually 2 hours later, you're still answering questions. So I said, "Put the tea kettle on. I'll be right over. We'll talk." And I do that a lot.
Now, I noticed too on the website that there's this Bang the Table software that was being used as part of this process.
Yeah.
I know that that's a fairly new initiative for
it
council.
Is
this the first time you used it with the budget process?
It is.
So how did that work out for you?
I looked at the comments. There was some good comments. A lot of people are concerned about their infrastructure, but mostly people are just concerned about the high level of taxes. They want to make sure that like you said in your intro, people don't really think about it until they get their tax bill, which I just got a couple days ago. And it's broken down into three parts, so it's not as big a hit as it would be if you got it all at once. But the primary issue is, how am I going to pay this on top of everything else? And they look at their taxes, and they look at their bills to pay their mortgage, their rent, and their food, and it just adds up after a while.
I appreciate very much when we talk about this in monetary terms, but we often don't talk about it on the flip side for the services that we get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that, you know, you go out and the roads are plowed, and that we can go down and take a book out of the library, or that, you know, in the hot summer day, I can go down and the beach has been cleaned and I can go and have a nice swim. All these things we don't really talk about a lot when we're talking about budgets.
That's true.
How do you keep a balance so that, you know, the things that we value, that pickup of spring brush and all those good things, how do you keep that balance with the monetary considerations that I know you take quite to heart?
I do take it to heart, but, you know, that balance has to be there. Like, for example, we, the taxpayers of this town, contribute just under $1 million to our local library. We have the best library of many communities, and there is that balance. We look at all the components. We look at what we really need. And, of course, the core mandate of any small municipality is infrastructure, the roads, the sewers, the water. When I was Mayor Prescott, I used to go talk to the kids at school, and I said, "Do you know what happens when you turn the tap on? Do you know what happens when you flush the toilet?" "Ew," they would say. But that's the education of teaching young people and old people what happens and where that infrastructure lies. So it's a lot of things you don't see, including the services you talk about, the libraries and the art galleries and the entertainment. But primarily it's making sure the infrastructure works, and I'm hoping in the future to start putting away a little bit of money for infrastructure reserve, because we don't have that right now. So we have to look after what we have, and those other things are great, but we also have to make sure they balance out with what we can afford.
Now, that's a great segue to the next part that I want to talk about, which is some of the budget highlights,
mm-hmm.
because there's a couple of top line items. One of them is the Kerr Street extension, and I understand that the plan is to take Kerr Street from Division to Darcy to create another major east-west corridor. Huge amount of money going towards this. Why is that such a big priority for the town at this time?
I don't know. I've only been here 6 years. It certainly wouldn't be a priority for me. I look at this, and I've done a bit of research on it. This came from 1980s, I guess. At that time, they thought that Coburg would be 35,000 people. We would need that corridor. So we've got Elgin Street, we've got King Street, we've got University, and I'm never in a traffic jam, and I'm around this town a lot. I don't know why this is being built. I don't know why we're paying $2.7 million, but it is a council decision. It has been approved, so I have to support it. But personally, I do question it.
So, well, that's stunning, because if it is, and it is one of the largest expenditures for this, and you know, when you look at it, I think Kerr Street, I do remember covering this way back in the day when I first arrived as a reporter 30 years ago, and the plan was to take Kerr Street from Highway 2, old Highway 2, County Road 2, all the way across down mm-hmm. to, it was going to be sort of a expressway that was going to get people through the town really quick from east to west. But this is only a section of that.
I know, and it's and my preliminary knowledge is it's going to be, upwards of 10 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excuse me. No, by all means. So that's one of the bigger items that's going forward. But another major project that I know there's been a lot of talk about, especially over the last number of years, but in particular last year, was the East Pier. Why is it so important to get moving on that one right away?
It somehow speaks to the heart of where people want to go and have their Timmies. You know, it basically boils down to people want to get out there. They want to look at the beach. They want to look at the water. They want to drive out there. There's a lot of seniors that can't walk out there that far. And that's basically it. They love the pier. They love the fact that they can go out a little bit further. We go sit along the water and watch the water without driving out on the pier, but that seems to be a Coburg right to go out there on that pier and look at the water.
If you had your druthers, what would you see as being the next step then? Because I know that it's in quite disrepair and it is starting to structurally get into big trouble. So I know that it's a priority just in terms of even just maintaining it. So why is it so important then? Because I know when I talked to Councillor Chorley, it wasn't that long ago, we talked about the harbor, and she said like there's still major repairs beyond the East Pier. The North Wall needs to be done. Mm-hmm. There's quite a lot of money that needs to be spent. Again, why aren't we reinforcing the North Wall? Just building a new pier. Why do we have to make it so fancy? I'm just wondering why we have to spend so much money on that.
Well, I think that's an excellent question. When we did the waterfront master plan, and there was 83 projects, and that was the top one, the East Pier. But it is 180 years old, and the infrastructure either has to be repaired or basically shut down. You know, we can't do it both. So we're looking at, you know, a few hundred thousand this year's budget. And we've applied for a grant, whether we get that grant or not. And we've applied for, I think, over $10 million in that. But it's so oversubscribed, you know, the chances of us getting anything, or we don't really know.
Another one that sort of isn't something that you would notice particularly, but I know is going to cost a lot of money and is a priority for the town, is the Matthew Street Road reconstruction. And for those who don't know, that's the little street that's just across from the library, runs from King up to University. I don't even think there's really too many houses on it, to be honest. And yet, that's an $820,000 project.
I know. And Matthew is a tiny little street. There's a couple of residents that I visit on that street. And it's part of the infrastructure plan through Public Works. I mean, one of the biggest budgets we have is Public Works. And they have a calendar of reconstructing roads. It's taking care of the infrastructure. Matthew Street just happens to be on the list this year, and it is not hard to get up to 800,000 in just, you know what it is, primarily if you go through the design work and the engineering work, that is sometimes a third of the budget. It's not the pavement, it's not the tractors and the, you know, it's the design work getting to that point. So it's a small street, but, you know, obviously Public Works, we don't really question a lot. We ask some questions, but we're not engineers. No one on council is. So we just basically, that's what's next.
Let's talk to about the Art Gallery of Northumberland. I know the town basically pays for that service in the town. You guys pay 63% of their budget, which is...
It's a big part.
Two-thirds of their budget. And yet... all that comes from Coburg, and yet we call it the Northumberland Art Gallery. 24% comes from the province, 5% from donations. Why is the town spending $250,000 in cash and in kind to keep that going? Why is that such a priority?
Well, it's
for
not
the
quite
town?
That high this year, but it's a mainstay of our cultural plan. We reduced it by 30,000 this year. You know, it wasn't 3 or 4 years ago, Robert, they used to get 25,000 out of our community grants allocation. Mm-hmm. And Olinda Casimiro, she's the executive director. She made a case that, you know, if we want to continue this art gallery, we need to fund it. At one time, it was called the Art Gallery of Coburg, or the Coburg Art Gallery. It flipped both ways. They've asked Northumberland for funding. They have not been successful. So, you know, it's a good question. I think they get about 10,000 visitors a year. There's no charge to go to the art gallery because it's a public art gallery. It sort of almost goes in the same vein as your, you know, initial comment about services and culture. We need to, if we're going to spend money on a cultural master plan, a lot of people disagree with that. They want core services, and that doesn't include. But it's a beautiful gallery. I don't think we have to keep monitoring what we're spending. We're hoping that as it grows and they get better, they will be able to apply for arts funding from the province, although both the province and the feds are in a deficit situation, so who knows how much money will eventually come from them.
Another thing that was on the budget was a new full-time person for the fire department.
Yes.
And I know when we look around us, Port Hope and other places, they have part-time fire departments. We have a full-time fire department. Now, they make in their presentation, they talk about, you know, the growth since 1991 and how much, you know, more than 5,000 new residential units. They talk about increased numbers of incidents. And yet, we didn't hear very much discussion about this ask for a new staffer. And in fact, I mean, there isn't even a committee, I think, that oversees this. Is there, like, who oversees the fire department internally?
Councillor Burkett is on protection services, and that includes the fire and the police both. So he does go to some fire department meetings. And actually, if you remember, he actually came to, after 2 days of deliberation, he wanted to up that one person to four. And we all did, you know, no, we certainly can't afford that. But you're right. We grow at 1% a year. That's all we grow here. You look at the last two censuses, it's 5% every 5 years. So we're not growing by leaps and bounds. We're maintaining the status quo. And everyone wants to be protected. No one wants to have a fire in their homes and not have someone come. So one person, and there's a lot of folks, there's a lot of firefighters that are eventually going to retire. So it's you know, just maintaining that. But 1% a year seems to be what their ask will be ongoing.
I guess,
or the, one person a year, sorry.
But I guess the question comes as this, is that, you know, we went through a police review quite a number of years ago, but we looked at our police service and we said, you know, what's the best way to deliver it? How are we going to deliver it? And a sort of a public debate took place. There was some questions asked. There was quite a bit of research done, and we landed on, we're going to keep our own. But we don't see that with the fire department. We don't see a public review. We don't see somebody coming forward and saying, here's what we're spending all of our time doing. Because, you know, I know that they do more calls, but how many of those are actual fires versus, you know, going out and supporting the paramedics and other things, fire inspections and those kinds of things, which, you know, you look at the police department, they're very innovative in the way that they allocate their manpower to make sure they get the best dollars and are not paying, you know, police officers to necessarily write reports or go look up for a stolen bicycle. Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing work that's associated with high-level policing. Why are we doing the same thing with the fire department?
Well, that may actually happen this year. I have pushed very hard for a service delivery review and an organizational review, and the fire department will be part of that, as well as every department in town. We are going to look at what the services are, what the manpower component is, what our services are, and how we're delivering them. And with a new CAO about to be hired, it's all going to come full circle. So I will bring that forward as part of those conversations.
Well, we'll look forward to that report, and I'm sure it'll be very interesting. Well, I can't believe our time is already up.
Already? I haven't even gone through all my papers, Robert.
It's all right. It's such an incredibly complex budget, and I encourage listeners to take the time to go, to read it, to make themselves aware, and, of course, to ask questions, because that's always what's so important. So thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Robert.
Up next, a community activist who is busy keeping politicians in two neighboring municipalities in line. Please stay tuned to consider this on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back.